This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the 18. That makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wait take the mic.
Here we are about to chat Raw. From OKC.
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 That's a cool abbreviation.
OTC and OKC tonight.
Oh.
They missed out on a t-shirt opportunity.
I was going to say, are we sure about that? Are you sure that that wasn't a thing?
I did not get to, I did not scan the merchandise, but if they screwed up on that lack of a shirt on this night, well.
We make mistakes in business every day.
You're forgiven, Nick. You're forgiven. Speaking of t-shirts, your very, very last chance. Chop-tees.com/postwrestling. The store closes today, November the 25th. Well, today for most of you listening. So your very last chance of picking something up, because we have no idea if we'll even have a merch store left.
Make it a November to remember. Grab your final existing post-wrestling merchandise. Chop-tees.com/postwrestling. As Dickie Bird will be horseback riding into the sunset with Chop Tees, the great Chop Tees. Also want to make mention that we did do our full gear review on Saturday evening. You can still go back and catch that show free here on the YouTube channel. And special access for all members of the Post Wrestling Cafe today. It is the history of the Survivor Series. Beginning in 1987, all the way up until last year in Vancouver, British Columbia. All years covered. A lot of yours truly talking into this microphone, and all patrons now have access to this monster of a show, as we have provided that for everybody in both audio and video. The great Waiting making this a respectable video presentation that we could put together. After
I put in 5 minutes of work into this. You put in 3 hours plus over multiple days to record your complete retrospective. Talking off the top of your head, as you do tremendously for all the other ones, about every single Survivor Series. So I'm just going to fast forward to like 1997 to just hear what you have to say about that.
You'll be very disappointed, okay? I spend about 30 seconds on the screw job, okay? I was not spending any time. I will warn everyone in advance. You're not going to get the... you and I literally did a documentary on that topic. I was done. I was done with that topic 15 years ago, and I'm still done all these years later.
Well, with the exception of... the Excel edition of this particular podcast, where we did spend like 10 minutes.
Brett keeps dragging us back into it, and then we have to talk about it. Wait till he announces like he's going to. He literally goes through in this interview in the sit down interview. He goes like the literal like blow by blow account of punching Vince McMahon and everything going through his head, and just why he threw an uppercut as opposed to a left cross, correcting the Undertaker after all these years that it wasn't a left cross, it was an uppercut. And why did he throw an uppercut? It's Brett. I mean, this guy could write his dissertation on Montreal, no problem. He would need 20,000 words and he would still have more to provide.
Yes. So check out that right now. The history of Survivor Series right now for all Post Wrestling Cafe patrons. Also available for all of our YouTube channel members early. And then for everybody else, released later on this week.
And what a week to be a member of the Post Wrestling Cafe. You've got the history of Survivor Series. and then Tuesday. Okay. This is the big one I've been waiting for. Myself and Brandon from New Jersey. It's going to be the, I don't know. I was going to say the David Silver to my, I don't know who I would play here. But nonetheless, Brandon from New Jersey will be joining me, and we are going through season 4 of Beverly Hills 90210. We will do a recap of the season, and then we're going to do a deep dive into the 2-hour season finale entitled Mr. Walsh Goes to Washington. This is a very significant episode in 90210 history. It is Brandon's trip to Washington to meet President Bill Clinton. It's Kevin and Suzanne's 8-month scam coming to its crescendo with its victim, Dylan McKay, and everyone will remember when Donna Martin, fresh off the Babyface concert at Mardi Gras, searching for David and finding him in the back of a limo. But folks, David Silver was not alone in that limo. What will Donna find? Tune in Tuesday. We'll be going through all of this. I know Way is going to listen to none of this, but I promise you, for those that do, you will not regret the listen.
I might have it on in the background. I mean, I'm excited to just hear you passionately speak about something that you are interested in. You know, like I feel that way about baseball. I feel that way certainly about, you know, MMA and pro wrestling. But I don't think you've seen John Pollock truly happy until you've heard him talk Beverly Hills 90210, the other great passion in his life.
Well, it's the passion is going to come out on Tuesday, and the only person I can do this with is Brandon Walsh, amazing, from New Jersey. Yes. All right, and then later on this week, it's book club time. This book is All Elite that I will be chatting with Neil Flanagan about. So that is going to be out for our Double Double Espresso members.
See, that part is actually work. Okay, the wrestling part is work. 90210, that's Pollock's playtime, all right?
To do this for free. This I am not able to say about too many things. I read this book for Thursday in less time than this season finale took place of 90210. I read the whole book in 90 minutes.
Really?
This 2-hour season finale.
Is it that quick of a book, or are you just like such a fast reader?
It's both, but...
Wow.
It's still like a 200 plus pager or so, but still a lot of discussion points, even though it was a quick read. And then the last thing we'll mention is that Saturday night, Way and I will be live after the Survivor Series. So all of that coming up this week, and a special Thursday night edition of Collision Course. Way and Kate are celebrating U.S. Thanksgiving by chatting Collision.
Well, of course, I couldn't ask any of our American friends to do the show, so... It'll be two Canadians talking about Collision Course on American Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Can't wait. Well, tonight they were at the Paycom Center in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. 9,308 tickets out, according to WrestleTix, which was very good for this building. WrestleTix noted it was up from 8,200 the last time they ran this in September of 2024. And of the last 5 times that they have run this venue, this was the highest that they have drawn there. And as the show begins, we do see footage of the construction of the Survivor Series set at Petco Park in San Diego, which has been underway for some time as they get ready for Saturday.
I'm looking forward to that. Outdoor stadium, double cages. It's going to look fantastic.
It should look cool. Like, this is, you know, it's a West Coast show, so it's going to be bright out. It's going to be, and as of right now, a 4-match show that they're going to get, unless they're contracted to go long.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep.
Roman Reigns begins the show. He is quickly interrupted by Cody Rhodes, who is all made up from the horrific bus incident on Friday's SmackDown at the hands of Drew McIntyre. And Cody states that the last time Roman gave his word, it was for a match. But this is war. I'm like, it's actually a match, Cody. Like, let's not get too hyperbolic here. But he asks, what's in it for you, Roman, to be on our team? And Reigns states that, you know, we don't like each other, but no one messes with my family. And my family is in this match, which I'm missing the part of the story where they suddenly made up before Christmas. Well, wasn't that the last interaction that he had with his cousins? I don't want to see you again until Christmas. And now he's like, he's going to war for his cousins.
Maybe he'll wear blind. Well, yeah, I guess he already broke it. He saw them. Listen, some things are just too important, and that includes war games.
Well, then Cody ends it by stating, "Welcome to my team," as he extends his hand, and CM Punk ain't having any of this my bullshit. He comes out and Reigns. Punk says that, Reigns, I worked with you last year and I ended up saving you. And then Reigns noted, yeah, but then you ruined my life. Ruined your life.
Well, WrestleMania was, part of Roman's downfall.
He chose Heyman to corner him, mm-hmm. and then Heyman fucked both of them. So I don't know what Punk did necessarily to ruin things, but, this guy was going to turn on them regardless, wouldn't he?
I mean, wasn't Heyman's explanation for, what was Heyman's reasoning for turning on the both of them?
He saw that, he saw the meal ticket in Seth Rollins.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if Roman's life has been ruined. I think he's doing just fine.
In story, I mean, he lost his wise man, lost his family, lost Azula Fala. So yeah, his life was ruined.
Okay. I don't know. It's I think he's doing just fine. So Cody explains to, or sorry, it's Punk that tells Cody that this isn't your team. This isn't the USA Network. This is Monday and it's Netflix. This is my show. It's like, oh yeah, right. We have separate shows for this kind of thing, but they're all getting together for War Games. Reigns explains he hates Heyman and the Vision, and he hates them more than he hates Punk, and that the title would look better on his shoulder. And Punk is like, were you talking to me or Cody? And Reigns just smiles as he exits. What mm-hmm. depth here. This was
he's talking about both of them.
Oh, who was he talking about? But wait, is he on Raw or SmackDown? I mean, Reigns is just like, he's just a jump ball, right? He was never drafted.
I think there's an actual answer to that question. I think he's SmackDown still, right? No?
He wasn't drafted when they did the last draft, so I assume he just remained undrafted. He's on Team Brock Lesnar, I think. Okay. They just go where they please. Well,
yeah, you're probably right. I guess who cares? It really doesn't matter is the answer.
It does matter. If he was on one brand, he wouldn't be allowed to go for, it would answer the question of what title he's talking about, because he couldn't just pick what title.
He can go for any championship.
What do you mean? There's a brand split.
We just had fucking Jordan, the JD. And okay.
I'm joking.
He will get special permission. I don't think it'll matter. You're not supposed to care about that, John, because clearly nobody else does. What we should be caring about is just this opening segment, which I thought was a strong opening segment, featuring a rare appearance from the three top stars in the company sharing the same stage. It to me felt like it kind of felt like Thor, Iron Man, and Captain America having their first argument together on the helicarrier. Just adorable, of course. And I thought they did a good job addressing Roman.
This felt like a scene after the credits where they're just hanging out and eating Forma? Food in a restaurant. This felt like, yeah, this felt more kind of, I don't know.
That'll be after War Games, okay? But I thought they did a good job addressing the histories of Roman with the other two. And while at the same time, obviously having to reestablish a little bit of dislike between the two of them. Not going overboard to the point where they can't work together, but sowing the seeds so that, beyond War Games, they can continue to feud with each other eventually. Cody and Punk beefing over who the real captain is. Roman ultimately setting his sights on one of the two champions that we currently don't necessarily know about. So, it's very clear, though, to me, watching the three of them, despite Cody and Punk having the championships, it's still Roman who feels like the clear special one out of the three, doesn't he? Like, he's the guy who feels almost above the championship, and I think it's such a credit to the Roman character, the way they protected him over the years since he's lost the championship, and maybe a credit to the infrequent schedule that's probably worked to his advantage as well.
See, his life is just going great.
Kind of has, yeah. The holiday season is fast approaching, but if you still have a few people left on your shopping list, don't worry. Uncommon Goods takes the hassle out of holiday gifting with thousands of unique, one-of-a-kind presents you won't find anywhere else. Many of these gifts are high quality, handmade, or crafted by independent artists and small makers. One standout gift this season is the personalized Pet Family Blanket, an exclusive item created by artist Shelly Klein and available only at Uncommon Goods. Shelly creates custom portraits in her sweetly simple illustration style, where you can customize skin tones, hair, clothing colors, and pet details to make it truly personal. Measuring 50 by 60 inches, made from soft cotton and polyester, it's perfect for snuggling with your furry family. Plus, each purchase supports small makers and donates $1 to a nonprofit of your choice, including the International Rescue Committee and American Forests. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
The Vision is backstage, and Heyman has picked Drew for the Advantage team, and then they name Logan as his partner. So it'll be a tag match tonight to determine the Advantage in the men's match. Gunther, Carmelo Hayes, our first of two quarterfinals in the Last Time Is Now tournament. So they went 17 minutes and 20 seconds. Gunther was controlling early, and then it's Hayes reversing a sleeper and ends up rolling on top of Gunther to escape. Hayes continues going for the sleeper, but Gunther breaks it, and then it's Hayes with a springboard into a kick and counters into a DDT. They go through two commercial breaks. Gunther deadlifts him into the air, and Hayes comes down with the first 48, goes for another, and is dumped over the top. A nothing but net attempt is stopped with a big chop, and Gunther just lights up his chest. There's a leaping DDT to the edge of the apron by Hayes, and then a tope con hero, and they tease the count out that Hayes is going to get a win just like he did on Friday against Bronson Reed. But Gunther just makes it back in at the count of nine. They did a really good job of teasing this to make you believe that he could upset Gunther. And so Hayes hits La Mystica, misses nothing but net, and gets a lariat powerbomb by Gunther. And then a sleeper is applied to Hayes, but he battles to his feet. So Gunther powerbombs him a second time and stacks him for the win in 17 minutes and 20 seconds. So they did a really great job of trying to get you to get behind Carmelo Hayes here, which was not an easy task, I would say, in this match.
Yeah, no, not at all. But I mean, it was a really good match. And I think with Gunther, you have the ability to tell like a very simple story, and you got a very simple but expertly executed David Goliath story here. You know, like I thought Carmelo was really great here. I mean, being a smaller guy on the roster, playing this underdog role, is, I think, a pretty decent way, you know, for him to be introduced to this audience. Or despite being here for like a year, he still kind of feels like he's in an introductory stage. But playing this sort of character against a heavy, big giant like Gunther, I thought like suited him really well, and he looked tremendous. I thought it was very well paced, you know, like saving his flashier and speedier stuff for the big comebacks, and it resulted in that great countout tease, which I think really worked well. And then you had that tremendous rush towards the finish. So these matches have continued to show just how consistent Carmelo Hayes is, and it hopefully comes with a bit of an increase in his appeal for a wider audience that will hopefully take to a push whenever it actually is coming. Because in the meantime, I think his destination is The Miz. So we await Trick Williams' appearance at some point.
Well, on to bigger and better things for Carmelo Hayes. Yep. Got his brush here with a main event star. Rhodes, Reigns, and Punk are backstage, and they get joined by the Usos, who want to take on Logan and Drew in the Advantage match. And Reigns asks them, well, whose team it is? YouTube fix it. And I guess this got fixed because the Usos just got put in the match.
I guess, like, weren't they always going to be in the match, or weren't they nominated even before this?
Well, I took this to be they're in the match, but then Reigns was like, well, you guys got to fix this. I was like, what's broken?
Their relationship.
No, but he was talking to Punk and Rhodes. How I don't know. Anyway.
Well, Punk and Rhodes is, who cares? Doesn't matter.
Okay. Well,
doesn't
matter. There you go. Reunited in time for the holidays. Maybe they'll even spend Thanksgiving together. Dominic comes out. Oh, my goodness. So I'm convinced that in the spirit of Montreal, that they went back and rewatched the fallout of Survivor Series 97 with Shawn Michaels and bringing back the midget Bret Hart. So Dominic comes out. He's going to put an end to Cena's retirement tour at Survivor Series and embarrass him in San Diego, then take back his Intercontinental title. And he is the greatest Mysterio of all time. And there's no John Cena here tonight, not in this dump. And Cena's music plays, and Joe Tessitore was just ridiculous with his reaction that, a bonus date, he's here. It's like, yeah, they're coming out unannounced for John Cena, and they have no merchandise for him. Yeah, I'm sure they just did this this bonus one-off. So out comes mini John Cena, complete with mini Stu.
Yeah. And they actually frame the shot so you see the real Stu filming little Stu, which in my mind just means that we have an even bigger Stu shooting all of this, like a sort of like a set of three Russian dolls Stews.
My God. Are we going to get a video of Hunter producing this intro, this introduction, and blocking everybody?
The whole uncut 90-minute behind the scenes breakdown.
Just looking at this image right now, like how much time was spent today on this segment? Probably an ungodly amount of time dedicated to this segment. So he comes out, he does the Cena entrance, and then he cuts a promo on Dominic, calling him the worst Mysterio. So Dom leans in, stick to the plan. I'm like, what was the plan? What was the plan?
I mean, I imagine something making fun of John Cena rather than the guy actually.
So this guy was going into business for himself. Once he got on television, he just wanted to get on television, on live TV with a microphone. And then he could praise his love for John Cena, because who could hate this man? So Dominic attacks him and hits a five knuckle shuffle and a frog splash until Ray comes down to save mini Cena. I thought these two were going to like team up, and Judgment Day comes out.
He's got to stand up for the little guys.
Sorry, this was atrociously bad, I thought.
Oh, I thought it was perfectly within like the wheelhouse of professional wrestling. Now, I mean,
it's been a while since we've got like the midget imposter of the star,
little person John. Like, before,
sorry, are we
before
not allowed to say midget?
I don't believe it's supposed to be said. I don't. At least I don't think it's.
This is a big debate now. This has been a big debate. Little person has been pushed back as well. So
is that right?
That's all I'm saying.
Okay, please correct us, everybody. But anyway, this segment I felt was like, I think, like, acceptable as like a throwback type of segment, because it feels like just almost like a traditional, like almost cliche wrestling segment at this point. But did some find it offensive? Like, I guess I have a much higher tolerance.
Oh, I wasn't offended. I just thought this segment sucked. That's all. I just did not.
I thought it was just like an interesting sight gag, you know? Even fun, I would say. But yes, I could see it being a turnoff for a lot of people as well. What are you finding in your research?
Well,
is it an offensive term or not?
It looks like it. For decades, the little people of America has continuously championed the removal of the slur midget from everyday language, advocating for a shift in how we discuss and represent individuals with dwarfism. The slur is not merely outdated, but discriminatory and abusive. Now, there's also a link here to
this coming from the guy who was about to tell me the name of what the arm-wringing thing.
Do you know...
Everyone
got it wrong, by the way.
Everybody got it wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know how many people messaged me after the show? It's like, this is what grabs everybody's attention. Not a, hey, enjoyed the show. Not a, hey, thanks a lot. Nothing. It's just the amount of DMs I got about this. There's a specific document that the Little People of America has attached specific to pro wrestling. public events and private spaces that host midget slash micro wrestling events for the purposes of entertainment are promoting objectification and stereotypes of disabled people, specifically people with dwarfism. Disability advocates call on these venues and event hosts to stop booking these events or cancel M-Slur Wrestling Warriors slash Micro Wrestling Federation and Big Little Brawler performances. The show promotes discrimination and bias against little people and other disabled persons. So they're against what even the utilization of these like little people being booked.
So when it comes to segments like these, I can completely see their point. Yeah. Obviously, when you're talking about like minis, where like I, for the most part, you know, like where wrestlers like Masquerita Dorada get to actually perform and be celebrated, I feel like they might change their mind. But the majority of instances where you would see a little person in professional wrestling in America would be segments like this, where they're just really the butt of jokes. And
this would not understand. Be your best B-roll to have out there. But I would say just the actual utilization of micro wrestlers, I don't think that in and of itself is an objectification.
Of
just
course
by,
not. But
well, that's what like, they're saying here.
But percentage wise, John, if you're to see a little person on American professional wrestling, are they presented in a very positive light? The answer is probably not. The answer is more likely instances like this. Dominic Mysterio stomping it.
Well, if everyone ever wants to remember, what was the final go-home angle for a PLE involving John Cena? This is the answer.
They've okay. had to get pretty creative, I suppose, with these, you know, lack of dates. With
is this
Cena
guy coming out at the Survivor Series?
To get one up on Dominic? Yeah, sure. Why not?
He's going to get his moment with John Cena in the ring at the Survivor Series. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's where this is all going. Rey Mysterio and JD McDonagh is what this bleeds into. And Mysterio lands his head scissors, sending JD over the top. They had a very good match here. Balor got involved with a cheap shot and then later tripping Rey. They tried several teases of the 619. So when he finally goes for the 619 on the second try, he's caught with a Spanish fly, then leaps onto the back of JD into a code red, and then after the trip, JD runs into Balor, Rey lands the 619, big pop, and then he hits his slingshot splash, which this guy started in WWE like 23 years ago. I have never heard them refer before tonight to the MP.
I have no idea what the MP stands for. I'm sure
Mexican plancha. They did explain it afterwards. I thought he hit him with the member of parliament, but no, it was the Mexican plancha. Joe Tessitore explained. I was like, they have never named this thing ever.
Okay, so he didn't do a slingshot straight into a press when he started. I believe. I think he did.
No. This came later. Standing but on he's the been top doing rope. This for a long time. This is not a new move that has come out of the last year or two.
Well, maybe he just decided to name it now. Maybe Tessitore got with him and he's like, you know what? Like, I got a great suggestion for that move.
The MP! Yeah. The MP!
Mm-hmm.
Hello, hello, hello. Davey Portman here from Poison Rana. We cover NXT every Tuesday night on the Post Wrestling feed in a show we call Up Next. But we do so much more. Follow Poison Rana Pod on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts for our live Sunday show, plus our Patreon with movie reviews, retro wrestling reviews, and more. Find out everything at poisonrana.ca.
Raquel complains to Adam Pearce about Nikki Bella getting a title shot. I was like, well, you know, she's a bigger star at this point, and she's getting the push for Survivor Series. So Raquel's going to get a title match eventually. It's like, just wait your turn. Everyone will get one. Then this new act walked in. I wasn't familiar with this group.
I believe they are called like something like the new Day, I think.
The New Day.
Yeah.
With Grayson Waller. They state that Adam Pearce has ruined everything. And to give comfort to Raquel Rodriguez, worried about getting a title shot, this very next segment just showed how easy it is if you just wait, because next week, after we have not seen these guys for weeks, they're mm-hmm. getting a tag title shot next week against AJ Styles and Dragon Lee. It's that simple.
Yeah.
I mean, keep showing up at work, and one day your number will be called.
Where has AJ and Dragon Lee been?
I mean, they've been around more than New Day has, but they were not on tonight's show. We last saw them telling Adam Pearce, we want to be fighting champions. And
honestly, at this point, I don't think tag team wrestling will ever be a priority on Raw, at least, you know, like they've made it clear that no matter what sort of, like,
let's put all the tag teams onto SmackDown. Let's give SmackDown 4 hours every week. And
at this point, yeah, I would be for that. Like, it's just they've had so many sort of like restarts, like with you know, championships changing place, and inevitably it's going to fall back to them forgetting about the tag team championships and just tag teams in general, because this show clearly does not prioritize it. So anyway, yeah, disappointing.
Brock Lesnar is shown arriving at the building, and he would spend 45 minutes doing God knows what backstage. Like, what is this guy doing to kill time before the main event run-in?
I would not even want to suggest.
Yeah, probably best to just leave it to a question mark. Becky comes out, followed by the rest of her team. Becky and Nia shared a look with one another, and then Becky explains she has the best lawyers in the country, and she is working on the injustice last week and cannot speak about it. The decision will be overturned and heads are going to roll, and that AJ made a big mistake coming back, costing her the title and now getting into a cage with me. Becky goes over the differences she had, mentioning with Asuka, who she says I beat 90% of the time. Nia, who's the only person who ever broke my face, but I didn't need a mask like rotten Rhea, and then refers to Charlatan Flair and awful Alexa, which prompts the babyface women to come out, led by AJ Lee, who cuts a promo on Becky being insecure, but I don't need to run my mouth to lift myself up. And maybe this Saturday, I'll let the old AJ out at War Games, and laughs as Becky is going to fall off her pedestal. And a brawl breaks out, which is the only final moment we can have leading into War Games. Everyone coming to blows. Rhea uses the microphone on Jax, and it ends with Flair and Rhea booting the women out of the ring, and they do dueling suck it chants, and Io hits a moonsault to the floor as Becky backs away in fear.
Yeah, but like as you would expect to head to a War Games, some sort of like big brawl just to showcase what you will see under a double cage on the PLE.
I was looking for like a point counterpoint.
Maybe that's a future War Games where like they'll just talk, get into a cage to just talk. Yeah. So this was our chance to like see an AJ promo by herself without CM Punk by her side. And not to say like Punk, you know, being next to her made any sort of like significant difference, but I think more so, the content of the promo, I didn't like as much from AJ this week. It felt like what I'm really afraid of is that they're going to use like her going to therapy as some sort of like new gimmick for her. Like she comes out and just says like, you know, if it wasn't for therapy, I'd be coming out and I'd be attacking you guys right now. And you know what? If you make me really angry, I might just get back into my old AJ form. Like I hate to see that being trivialized into like just like into a quirk rather than just something that I like is normal. So I didn't love that, but I love Becky's promo.
Can you imagine Vince McMahon producing this character?
Of course I can. Yeah, I would just be like,
your finisher is gonna be called Coach Time.
Oh jeez, yeah, of course. Or like
she's nuts. She's crazy. Well, yeah. That actually was the AJ character, right? She was
that's
nuts.
The name of her book, actually.
Yeah.
Crazy superpower. Yes. Yeah. I don't know. I something rubs like in 2025, and I realize we just did a whole segment with little people, but like, I just don't want to see it turned into a gimmick. You know what I mean? But I'm loving Becky. Like I still find her tremendously entertaining doing this sort of like rambling neurotic character. She speaks exactly the way you would expect a person that tweets in all caps to sound.
Solo Sikoa and Penta was our next quarterfinal match, and Penta gets thrown over the barricade, and then he returns on the barricade and leaps off with a Rana and just comes crashing down on the floor on his left shoulder. And you can see instantly that this guy, his shoulder is totally fucked up. He is like trying to adjust it. The referee jumps down and they go to commercial, But because this is on like Netflix, you're staying on the footage here, and Solo like just slowly gets up and he's just killing time in the ring and they don't know what to do. And we come back and they just wave the match off and Penta looks furious as he's just trying to like put his shoulder back, like he's like shaking the shoulder, and they just announced the match is off. And so you have never seen a guy in Solo Sikoa that looked so miserable that he had won this match. He's just like, I don't know what the outcome was supposed to be in this match.
No, I have seen somebody so angry. LA Knight, when he won the match with Seth Rollins.
Yeah.
That's what makes these things so interesting. Of course. It's like, I mean, this felt very obvious to me that it was reality, right? And unless you heard something, John, unless you want to tell me right now whether or not I remember. Okay. But this also offered us a comparison point to what they were trying to work with Rollins and Knight. And I think it just really clearly paints the steps that they could have done to make that Rollins one feel a bit more realistic. And partially it's due to, well, not going to a finish. Like, simply, like, go to commercial break, come back and call the match off if you want us to believe in it, right? Exactly what they did here, rather than having, like, Rollins, like, what, got out a BFT? Like, that was, in hindsight, very ridiculous. Secondly, all the, quote-unquote, selling from Penta was taking place off-camera on the outside of the ring, rather than, like, laying in the corner. So, like, really, in hindsight, I thought if they are reattempting to do one of these works again in the future, just do it exactly like what this was. You know,
so you will get Gunther and Solo Sikoa next week in the semifinals,
which clearly was like double heel, made no sense to book, right?
Yeah, I mean, like that would be your thought that you would do babyface heel.
I don't think there's any way that was supposed to be.
Well, the thought would be like Penta was not beating this guy clean, you would think. Like, most, they would be protecting Solo, which you could always do next week, too. But it is a weird kind of setup with Sikoa and Gunther. But again, I don't know what the outcome of this was supposed to be. Like, you would think on paper, like, Penta advancing would have probably been the route to go here.
It's a shame because Gunther Penta would have been amazing, you know, to have in this tournament. And I'm curious to see like how they get out of Solo versus Gunther.
Yeah, because like I don't think you want to do such a like gimmicky finish if it's like the concern is.
I think it'll be gimmicky. I think this Solo finish is probably going to be gimmicky if Penta was going to win.
Yeah, I mean you're right. It probably would have been. Pierce meets with Maxine and just explains how everyone is gunning for her. Like she's basically looked upon as a beatable champion and. She says, well, I'm going to call Natalya. And she gets confronted by Ivy Nile, then Perez and Raquel before Pierce comes back and says, well, you better make that call to Natalya now.
Yeah. Don't you find, John, that Adam Pierce is like oddly protective of Maxine? Like more than he is with most other baby faces. Like I almost like I would accuse him of favoritism.
Don't start rumors with.
Well, I'm accusing him of showing favoritism. For one of his talents, which I mean, I guess it's wrestling, you know, it's not that odd, but so yeah, very simple setup here for potential opponents here in Ivy Nile, Roxanne Perez. And I feel ultimately Natalya, wouldn't you say?
At some point, I think doing the turn would be, you know, a good way to go at some point, like introduce kind of that natty character in WWE. And, you know, here is like, I've taught Maxine everything. She's got the championship and Natalya wants to go for it. And then the video for Stephanie Vaquer promoting the match with Nikki. There was no Nikki on this show, so Vaquer just said that she was told not to trust Nikki but still became her friend. And then you betrayed me. You're not as smart as you think you are, because if you did, you'd know who you're dealing with. You clearly don't know my history and who you're messing with. I'll see you at Survivor Series. And it's Vaquer.
What history is she referring to?
I don't know. Maybe Nikki didn't watch Forbidden Door last year. Maybe she was not aware of her CMLL history.
And then I'm going to get a contract from a rival promotion.
Yeah, maybe.
Or I'll lose to you, I guess.
Yes, maybe you aren't aware that I tried out for WWE and they turned me down.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Rewind Away looks at some of the biggest retirement matches in wrestling history, featuring matches involving Terry Funk, Ric Flair, Sting, and Tam Nakano. Plus, John Pollock and Brandon from New Jersey get together to look back at season 4 of 90210, a season that brought you John Sears, Lucinda Nicholson, David's meth addiction, and Brandon moving in on Kelly Taylor. Book Club will cover This Book Is All Elite by Keith Elliott Greenberg. Plus, we have reviews of TNA Turning Point, UFC 322, and so much more. $6 gets you all this at postwrestlingcafe.com. The Usos against Logan Paul and Drew McIntyre. Men's advantage at stake. A 17-minute Raw main event is what I'm going to describe this as. Drew beats on Jay for a long period of time. He's calling for the encore as he beats down on Jay. Logan runs, knocking Jimmy off the apron. They continue beating on him. Jay's tossed onto the desk. We come back from break. Jay gets his feet up in the corner, makes the tag to Big Jim, and it's Logan with a blockbuster. Jimmy returns with a spear, hits the Uso splash, and then it's Drew in to make the save. Drew takes out Jay with a Glasgow kiss on the floor, and this is when Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed appear at ringside. So down come Cody and Punk to take care of the Vision and fight them off. Jay hits a dive onto everyone, but Jimmy, in being distracted here by his brother diving, gets rolled up from behind by Logan Paul, and the heels get the win and thus the advantage in 1701. And that prompts a further brawl as Punk goes after Logan. The heels take over. OTC chant is made, and Roman has heard the sign. He has not left the building yet, and out comes Roman. Superman punches to everybody. And then, as the five babyfaces stand together in the ring, Brock Lesnar finally found the gorilla position, and he comes out. I thought he was literally going to come out and just stand with these guys, and that was going to be his whole night of work. It's like, okay, Brock, we're going to shoot you coming into the arena, and then you're going to walk out to your music. But as he came out with Heyman, in what can only be described as the all-time greatest Brock Lesnar blooper that I can think of, at least that is not involving any disputes, he comes out. He does his big roar to his pyro, and he falls over, like full ass over tea kettle. If this guy had been Titus O'Neil, this would have been replayed to death at another time. This will probably be edited out of the Netflix replay by tomorrow, I would think, given their propensity for this guy looking like a fool. He looked like a total idiot. And then he gets up, and the grin on his face is like, yeah, I meant to do that. He did like a total like fucking backward roll coming down here. He just tried to make it like, yeah, I'm just doing like a warm up here before I walk down the aisle. I wanted to replay and just watch the mechanics of what the hell happened here. How did he even do this?
I really feel like we're entering a new phase of Brock Lesnar at this point. It started with the pant rip, if you remember, John, where he tried to play it off just as much. And now this.
Look at this guy.
And this is a guy who makes, like, I don't know, like 5 appearances a year. And 2 of the 5 has already resulted in some of the most hilarious bloopers. Maybe, like, I don't know, jeans and cowboy boots just aren't his thing, you know? Or maybe the man's just losing some coordination at his age. I think this should be his gimmick, quite frankly, John, at this point. This was like a glitch
in the latest, like, 2K game.
Yeah. He should be like Kurt Hennig when Kurt Hennig returned like in like 02 and they made him like Mr. Imperfect, where like he would like try to do perfect things and then he'd screw up. Anyway, that's how I would book him, okay? For all the money that they're paying him, yeah, turn him into a funny man. Look at Heyman, just like staring.
Look at this fucking guy. And then they had a brawl. I didn't care about the brawl. I only cared about like going back to watch this. And that's how the show ended, going into War Games on Saturday.
These are some
Has this show broken us?
These
it's broken
some,
me.
No, like the still images are just some of the great results of
the
show.
That's the best one. That's the best one. That's not a man that's fucking with everybody. That's a man who has lost his battle with gravity in midair. And Heyman knows, oh shit, he's not getting back up here. Look at that. That's 300 pounds coming down hard.
Oh, boy.
He's like, I'm just going to roll with it.
No, honestly, like they'll probably try to protect him still beyond this, but like I think shit like this, pants ripping, if he has one more of these embarrassing moments, it'll have a real like effect on the perception of Brock Lesnar as this like unbeatable monster, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean maybe John is second guessing that WrestlePalooza booking after seeing this guy.
Yeah. Anyway, the build to War Games this year I think has been okay, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's felt hot, you know, in the way maybe like some prior War Games have. It's certainly star-studded. I think the lineups look really good. They do feel like they're like, you know, all
I think you're going to get two really, really strong matches out of them. I mean,
yeah.
I'm looking forward to the show on Saturday. Yeah, I think like I would say both of them, like they're heavily reliant on it's all the big names and there are stories. That's not to say like there's no story here. There's a deal with Becky and AJ, and they've tried to go into the history of the women and the men. Like the men, there's quite a bit that you can lean on here. So this is not just like we're just throwing names in together. But ultimately, I think you are going to get two really excellent matches out of it. But I would say like you're the level of build, I have a similar opinion as you do.
I think the lineups look strong, but I don't know if the story is necessarily hitting for me. Like for me, the hottest story heading into either of the War Games has been Kabuki Warriors versus Rhea Ripley and Io Sky. And even
which,
that kind
which,
of feels-
that's really taken a back seat since like War Games has formed. Like they are kind of like that whole story has just like they're not getting any of their segments backstage anymore. And they've sort of just like Asuka was just kind of a punchline for Becky in the promo. And to me, it was like, man, Asuka's been like this evil character. And she was just like a comedy line for Becky in the promo. And I did not think that fit like that. You could have done that with Kairi, but with Asuka, I feel like I wouldn't have been making her the butt of the joke there for Becky, where everything was about the Becky promo and Asuka kind of just stood there.
So, I mean, I like the lineups. I'm looking forward to the matches, but it does not feel like to me a War Games that justifies itself based off of story rather than just, hey, it's the calendar. It's this spot on the calendar. We're supposed to have a War Games. Let's find five people to be on a team. It's kind of how this one feels to me.
Yeah. You don't have, it's not like there's anything really at stake in these matches either beyond it just being, in theory, some kind of blow off, and it is going to be interesting as well of like how much blood they go into in these matches. Like, do we get bloodbaths?
So did we last year?
I'm pretty sure we had blood.
We had blood
War Games last year.
Okay. I don't think you'll get a bloodbath.
What I remember most is the Hell in a Cell last year, where that was a big one with Punk and Drew.
If I was WWE, I don't know if I would even entertain it, because you're going to make comparisons to like Sky Blue, you know, and Kyle O'Reilly, and there's no way you can compete. I don't want to see them compete.
Outdo it. Go for an artery.
Sure.
All right. That was Raw going into Survivor Series. So we will be returning on Wednesday. I've got Pollock and Thurston with Brandon at 1 Eastern Wednesday, and then Way and I back at our normal start time for Dynamite, a 2-hour Dynamite. I'm all for it. So we will be live on Wednesday evening and then heading into the weekend.
PostWrestlingCafe.com right now, where you can listen to John Pollock's entire history talking about the Survivor Series. And later on this week,
just my entire history.
Your entire history of your life.
With
a bit of
John
Survivor
Pollock
Series.
Coming up.
I would listen to the hell out of that. But tomorrow, you, Brandon from New Jersey, talking about 90210.
Can't wait. It's going to be...
Which will reflect your personal history in some way. I'm sure your life mirrored very much the events of season 4.
You know, there was a alternate universe where I ended up leaving Minneapolis and going to West Beverly and having to acclimate to what was a brand new world full of Rodeo Drive and people that sounded fake.
Of course, yes. All right. Thank you, everybody. Continue on this podcast if you're listening to in the Post Wrestling Cafe for the XL edition. We'll talk to you freeloaders later.
Get out of here. This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.